Welcome back to the Neuracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and joining me as always is my co-host.
Great to be here. We've got a packed show today.
We're talking about the reality of AI job displacement, or maybe the lack thereof, depending on who you ask.
Yeah, it turns out AI made us do it is becoming the new supply chain issues for corporate earnings calls.
Exactly. We're also going to look at the next frontier for consumer robotics, moving from the living room out into the garden.
And a really sobering look at quantum computing. Not the physics of it, but the compliance nightmare it's about to unleash on corporate legal departments.
It's the harvest now, decrypt later threat, and it's closer than you think. Let's get into it. Kicking things off with AI and employment, there's a fascinating dynamic playing out right now. In February 2026, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman came out and said that some companies are engaging in what he calls AI washing.
Right. They're blaming layoffs on AI when, in reality, those cuts would have happened anyway.
It's a convenient scapegoat. You have a bad quarter, you overhired during the pandemic, interest rates are up. Instead of admitting a strategic error, you say, we're restructuring to focus on AI efficiencies.
Which investors love to hear, by the way. It frames a financial struggle as an innovation pivot. But Altman is trying to thread a very specific needle here. He's calling out the fake AI layoffs, but in the same breath, he's warning that real displacement is coming and will be palpable in the next few years.
And that's where the data gets really interesting. Because right now, the numbers do not support the panic. A February 2026 study from the National Bureau of Economic Research surveyed C-suite execs across the US, UK, Germany, and Australia. Nearly 90% of them reported that AI had absolutely no impact on workplace employment over the past 3 years.
90%! And it's not just survey data. The Yale Budget Lab looked at US Bureau of Labor Statistics data through November 2025. They specifically looked at roles with high AI exposure. They found zero significant shifts in unemployment duration or occupational mix for those jobs.
So the macroeconomic footprint of AI job replacement is currently negligible, which makes Altman's warning about the next few years feel a bit like a looming shadow. Is he seeing something in the upcoming models that we aren't, or is this speculative?
I think it's two things. One, the current tools, like Copilot or ChatGPT, are productivity enhancers, not autonomous workers. They make a junior developer faster, but they don't replace the need for the developer entirely. Yet.
Right.
But two, Altman knows the trajectory. When we move from these conversational assistants to fully agentic workflows, which we are seeing the early stages of, that's when the equation changes. If an AI agent can take a high-level goal, break it into tasks, execute them, and verify the outcome without a human in the loop, that's structural displacement.
But we have to talk about the trust issue this AI washing creates. If leadership blames AI for a 10% workforce reduction today, it destroys morale and makes employees actively hostile toward adopting the technology.
Absolutely. It turns a tool that could make their jobs easier into an existential threat. If you're a worker, why would you train the system or integrate it into your workflow if you've been told it's the reason your colleagues were fired?
It's a massive PR failure. Companies are buying short-term investor goodwill at the cost of long-term internal alignment. And when the actual palpable displacement Altman is predicting does arrive, the well will be completely poisoned.
It's the boy who cried wolf, but in reverse. The wolf isn't here yet, but the village elders are already selling the sheep and blaming the wolf to cover their own debts.
That is a very apt, if slightly bleak, metaphor.
Let's move from the abstract fears of AI to something very grounded. Literally, we're talking about the garden. The Washington Post had a story titled, Roomba Pioneer Aims to Crack the Household Market Again with an AI-powered pet robot.
Yeah, and we should clarify that title right out of the gate. The robot in question isn't a mechanical dog. It's the Turtle. It's a solar-powered autonomous weeding robot.
Right. The pet aspect is more about how people perceive it wandering around their vegetable patch.
Exactly. This is the brainchild of Helen Greiner. She co-founded iRobot and co-invented the Roomba. Back in September 2020, she took over as CEO and chairman of Turtle, which used to be called Franklin Robotics.
The pedigree is undeniable. She helped define consumer robotics by focusing the Roomba on one very specific bounded task, vacuuming a flat floor. The Turtle takes that same philosophy outside. It uses capacitive sensing to distinguish between a weed and a plant you want to keep, and it just endlessly patrols your garden, chopping down weeds.
But what's fascinating is the struggle with product market fit. Greiner has been very open about this. The robot works. The engineering is sound. But the target demographic, home vegetable gardeners, are often people who garden specifically to get away from technology.
It's a clash of cultures. You're out there with your hands in the dirt, connecting with nature, and suddenly there's a little solar-powered disc whirring around doing the work for you.
It highlights a massive barrier for outdoor consumer robotics. Inside the house, we want efficiency. We hate vacuuming. We want it automated. Outside, especially in a garden, the labor is sometimes the point.
Well, weeding is usually the part people hate, but I get the sentiment. But it also speaks to the environmental chaos of the outdoors. A living room is relatively static. A garden has mud, rocks, growing plants, varying sunlight, rain. The engineering constraints are wild.
And that goes back to the pet title of the article. Greiner noted that users often project a personality onto the robot. They name it, they watch it. That perception often exceeds the machine's actual capabilities. If it gets stuck on a rock, it's cute rather than broken.
Which is a brilliant buffer for early-stage robotics. If people view it as an appliance, any failure is a defect. If they view it as a pet, a failure is a quirk.
But is a quirk enough to sustain a business? General-purpose appliances scale massively. Niche tools have a ceiling. Turtle has to convince a very specific subset of consumers that this adds value without ruining the vibe of their hobby.
It's a tough sell. But if anyone understands how to temper consumer expectations and deliver a single-task robot that eventually becomes ubiquitous, it's the person who gave us the Roomba. All right, for our third deep dive, we're looking at a threat that feels like science fiction, but is rapidly becoming a legal reality. A piece from JD Super asks, have you taken steps to prepare your privacy and cyber compliance for quantum?
This is about the harvest now, decrypt later strategy. The premise is terrifyingly simple. Adversaries, usually nation states, are scooping up massive amounts of encrypted data right now. They can't read it today, but they're storing it, waiting for the day a quantum computer becomes powerful enough to break the encryption.
And that day is getting closer. Quantum computers use algorithms, like Shor's algorithm, that can solve the mathematical problems underlying our current public key encryption, like RSA and ECC, in a fraction of the time a classical computer would take.
Which is why NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, finalized their post-quantum cryptography standards in August 2024, FIPS 203, 204, and 205. They're officially telling the world the clock is ticking. They plan to deprecate and remove quantum vulnerable algorithms by 2035, but high-risk systems have to transition way before that.
So the technical challenge is huge, but the JD Super piece focuses on the legal and compliance side, which is arguably messier. Think about data privacy. If you anonymize user data today using current encryption, and a quantum computer can break that encryption in 5 years, is that data actually anonymous?
That's the billion-dollar compliance question. Under GDPR or CCPA, if data can be re-identified, you are liable. If an adversary has harvested your anonymized data today and decrypts it in 2030, you could theoretically be on the hook for a massive privacy breach for data you lost years ago.
It forces a total rethink of data minimization. You can't just encrypt and forget. If you don't absolutely need the data, you have to destroy it.
But how do you balance this existential 5 to 10 year threat with the fact that companies are getting hit with ransomware today? If you're a CISO, your hair is on fire from immediate threats. Allocating budget to transition to post-quantum cryptography feels like buying flood insurance when your house is currently on fire.
It's the ultimate prioritization nightmare. But the NIST standards being finalized means there's no more excuse that the math isn't ready. The math is ready. Now it's an engineering and compliance slog.
And the legal liability is going to drive the timeline more than the tech. The moment a court rules that failing to implement post-quantum cryptography constitutes negligence, every enterprise on Earth will scramble. It's a stark reminder that in cryptography, there is no permanent security, just a lead time. And our lead time is shrinking.
All right, that's a lot of heavy lifting. Let's hit a few more stories real quick before we get out of here.
Sounds good. I've got the roundup ready. Let's do it.
Starting in 2027, the EU battery regulation mandates that portable batteries in smartphones and tablets must be readily removable and replaceable by the end user.
And readily removable means using commercially available tools. No thermal energy to melt glue, no solvents. It's a huge win for repairability and reducing e-waste. But it's going to force a massive hardware redesign for Apple and Samsung.
Over on GitHub, an interesting feature request for Anthropic's Claude Code CLI. Users want a hybrid voice mode. Tap the spacebar to toggle dictation if the input is empty, but hold it to dictate inline if there's already text. It's a great example of how AI tooling is evolving. The bottleneck isn't the model's intelligence anymore, it's the ergonomics of getting human intent into the system fast enough. Developers want to think and speak at the speed of code. Also from Anthropic, their Java SDK hit version 2.28.0. The big addition is Workload Identity Federation, allowing apps to authenticate using short-lived OIDC tokens from AWS or GitHub instead of static API keys.
It also improves their managed agents APIs. They are clearly pushing hard to make their hosted agent infrastructure enterprise-ready. Dropping static keys is practically a prerequisite for any serious corporate deployment.
One more Claude Code issue. Developers are frustrated that the task get API only returns a summary projection of a task, omitting the custom metadata they can write via task update.
It essentially makes the metadata write only through the API, forcing devs to parse underlying JSON files. If you're building complex, stateful, multi-agent workflows, you need to read that state back. They'll definitely need to patch this.
Finally, a warning for Mac users. Notepad++ creator Don Ho had to publicly call out an unauthorized macOS port of the famous text editor that was using the official logo and name.
The developer of the fake port even listed Don Ho as an author to look legit at it. He's since agreed to rebrand, but it's a classic open source risk. Always double-check the source repo before you download what looks like an official port.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of the NetraCast Tech Briefing.
Thanks, as always, for listening. If you found today's deep dives on AI washing or quantum compliance useful, share the episode with a colleague. It really helps the show grow.
We'll be back tomorrow with more of the tech news you need to know. Until then, stay safe and keep building.